Drive, chip, and putt. Golf is so easy. Four? Okay, maybe the occasional wedge. Let's talk golf. It's the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN Chicago. Presented by the Glenview Park Golf Club. Now here are your hosts, Mike Gilligan and Tyler Rocky.
Good morning and welcome on in to the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1000. We talk golf with you every single Saturday, 9 to 11 a.m. throughout the golf season. It's all brought to you by Glenview Park Golf Club. Tyler Rocky and Mike Gilligan with you here for the next couple of hours, and I owe you a big thank you. You walked in today. Not only did you re-grip the putter that I gave you last week, thank you for that very much. It looks great. I'm very excited to use this, but you also dropped off two more putters for me to experiment with a little bit.
Well, that's just the way I just wanted to say good morning here on this very special St. Patrick's Day Saturday here in Chicago. Yeah, we had a good time in the office re-gripping Tyler Rocky's putter. Everyone was marveling at your Ricky Fowler
special
orange one. Oh, yeah, everyone's checking it out, you know, the whole nine yards. But now it'll be interesting to see what you think. So what I did is I brought you a couple mallet heads because we were talking last week about this shift that Scotty made with his putters. And obviously what we said was if he just putts, what, halfway decent and average, he'll run away from the field. Well, guess what? He did just that. He ran away from the field at Bay Hill and looks extremely comfortable with that new putter. So when we were talking the change of going from blade to mallet, what I'm giving you is a few mallets to try. One is a toe hang, and the other one is very face balanced, and the toe hang will mirror a little bit more of the feel of your blade putter. But I'll be excited to get your feedback next weekend on what you think.
Yeah, I'm excited because we were talking a lot about putters last week, and you are the putting maestro. You know everything that there needs to be that goes into selecting a putter. And so for you to kind of give me all those different tips and tricks and what to try, what not to try was really helpful. And if you've got a putting question for Mike, 312-332-3776. He can try to help you out best he can. But yeah, I think we start with Scotty, who was a magnificent putter last week at the Arnold Palmer Invitational, goes out, wins the event, and it's because of what he did with the putter. And it just feels like he finally got into form, and he looks like, I don't want to say he looks like a different golfer. He's the same golfer because everything else is the same. It's just he's not 2 and 3 putting. He's 1 and 2 putting now, and that is a huge difference when we're talking about tournament-level golf.
There's no question about it. I mean, try 11 one-putts on the final round of Bay Hill. Is that any good? I mean, 11 one-putts. They don't add up fast, folks, when you are one-putting 11 times. And trust me, he's not doing it to save par. He's doing it to make the birdies. So he was the low round of the day on Sunday, to go to your point that he just absolutely dominated. And he was only 1 of 4 rounds that was in the 60s on Sunday. So you can tell Bay Hill was starting to show its teeth. But Scotty, to your point, you know what he looked? He looked comfortable. He looked totally relaxed on the putting green. And just that, I think, half inch of length to his putter. I don't know what it was, but the changes that he made, he just looks like a completely different guy personality-wise and confidence-wise as he struts and strolls around the putting surface. Tee to green, he is simply the best.
He's the same golfer he's always been. The best that we've seen on the tour in the last, what, 2-3 years now? That's pretty much where he's resided, either like one or like top three at that point, and now it's a definitive number one. Like, there's no doubt about it. And when the putter's going like it is, then, yeah, you're going to find yourself in a lot of tournaments. Right now, over at the Players down at Sawgrass, he is tied for 6th right now. He could make a run today. He is just, Wyndham Clark is the one making a run right now. He's 6 strokes ahead of the pack, or 6 strokes ahead of Scotty, I should say, 4 strokes ahead of Xander and Nick Taylor. But there's a lot of intrigue, I think, on this leaderboard at the Players. And we'll check in with James Colgan, our buddy over at golf.com. He's going to join us at 10:35 live from Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida, to talk all things players and everything that's gone on down there. There's been some interesting press conferences, too, that we'll dissect because leadership, it feels like they're on the hot seat a little bit with everything that's going on. But getting back to Scotty, like, if he's playing like this, we kind of talk about the Masters, and it's right around the corner. We are less than a month away now at this point. And the Masters with Scotty, if he's putting like this, he's got a really, really strong chance of picking up his second green jacket.
Oh, there's no question. And today, for Scotty in particular, is a day to really pay attention to how he plays. For those who don't know, he hurt himself on the second hole, or the 11th hole, but he teed off on the backside first yesterday. And he got some discomfort in his neck, and he said for the next tee shot in the swings thereafter, he could barely get it back and was considering pulling out of the event. But on the 14th tee, there was a bit of a break, and he had his physiotherapist come on out. They sat him down in a chair, and he worked on him for a few minutes. And in the PGA Tour level, that is permissible. You can have, for health reasons, an aide or somebody to come out and provide treatment. He then calmly went out and made par and went on to, shoot a snappy 60, 69. Yes. And, so is he going to be the superstar that's injured that you're now worried about, like a Michael Jordan-esque? Mm-hmm. Could he just turn around and go hammer down and just catch Wyndham and play like crazy? Or is he potentially hurt? So I look at today as a key indicator as to how Scotty's feeling and if this thing is going to continue in a large way and run right up to Augusta or not.
We'll probably know within the first couple holes.
Oh, absolutely.
With Scotty, because if you see if the ball striking is there right out of the gate, you'll know, all right, this is Scotty as usual, he'll be fine. And like we've seen golfers in the past, like sometimes it's when they're at their best. Is we talked a little bit last week about in the rain, sometimes you see some really good performances out of these guys because they don't really worry about the fundamentals of their swing. They just kind of go with their gut, and professional golfers' guts are pretty good at that stuff, and they don't think about that. They're more concerned about the rain. And it's the same thing with an injury at times. Like you're thinking about, oh, what's wrong with my shoulder? What's wrong with my wrist? And sure, it may impact your swing a little bit, and you may be trying to overcompensate at times, but sometimes it's when you play your best.
Yeah, and you mentioned the rain. It's kind of funny because, believe it or not, there is a talent to playing in the rain in unison and in concert with your caddy to stay dry. Mm-hmm. So when you are like in tandem making that motion and that process all eloquent and good, all of a sudden the ability to execute shots is just who you are. It's innate, and that muscle memory starts to take over. And that's how athletes start to find what they call the zone.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know how I got there, but somehow I got there. And maybe it was just because I took my mind and put it on a different process and just innately let my, my professional process and abilities take over, and hence, firing darts.
Yeah. Well, the putting is certainly what has spurred this stretch of Scottie Scheffler golf that we've seen. We talked a little bit about it from Rory McIlroy was the one who kind of inspired him to go to that new mallet-style putter. And Rory talked about what he said to Scotty and if he regrets it at all.
I'm not going to give him any more advice, that's for sure. I was asked the question, and I basically give a response that was, it's very hard to talk about other players, right? It's you don't want to say anything that's, Scotty's had enough criticism about his putting over the, he doesn't need me to start. I mean, you guys talk about it enough, so it was me basically trying to, talk about myself more than talk about Scotty. I was like, okay, when I putted with a blade, I struggled. When I went to the Spider, I found a little more success and I was a little more consistent. And I didn't know he was going to put it straight in the bag and win by five. But I think, yeah, I don't, if people ask for advice, I'll certainly give them, because it's not, I don't feel like I need to be guarded or need to, I think over the years coming up through the ranks, people have been good enough to me if I've asked them advice to give me advice. So, I think I should be able to repay that to other people if they come to me. So
Hey, Rory.
So that was interesting because, like, you look at the pay it forward mindset, mm-hmm. and this is someone who's one of your fiercest pieces of competition now on the tour. And now you're trying to help him out with a tip that, I mean, a tip that quite frankly could make him one of the best golfers of all time.
Yes, but it also makes the PGA Tour a better product all the way for around. Sure. And mm-hmm. I think that's where Rory's heart is in all of this. And it always has been. And that's a mature Rory. I don't know that Rory, when he was coming out with that big, you know, mop of hair and he was, you know, the swashbuckling kid, don't know that he'd be quite the same way. I think he would have been more guarded. But clearly somebody had an impact on him, paid it forward. And I think this is the greatest lesson in life, is to be able to be in a position to do just what Rory is doing. And if he does, you know what? At the end of the day, Scotty still had to get it in the hole. I mean, whether he putted with a plumbing wrench or a spider, mm-hmm. He made it work, and he's got a talent that is like no other. And, you know, and if this is it, then, you know, the assist goes to Rory. And I think Rory will always get a very nice Christmas card. Let's just say that every year from the Scheffler household.
312-332-3776. If you want to join us here, Sam is in the Western Burbs. What's going on, Sam? Hello, Sam. Let's put Sam on hold for a second there. He had a putting question for Mike. If you've got a putting question for Mike as well, 312-332-3776. Just kind of looking, though, at like what the future sort of holds at the Masters, too. Because Rory, I mean, like, if you've been watching Full Swing and stuff like that, like, you know he's feeling the pressure now. He knows his game isn't in a bad spot, but he knows that there is a significant hurdle that he still has to clear. I mean, he's had a number of top tens over the past two seasons, but now it's like getting over that next hurdle, because finishing runner up, finishing top five, at the end of the day, it feels like there's more jokes on Rory than not, because of A, how he handled LIV at the onset of it all, and B, this is a guy who hasn't won a major in quite some time now, and they're like, the Masters is going to be a big tournament for him, and all four of the majors for that matter.
Well, you know, when he made the comment when Brooks won, that was very telling, and keeping kind of his antenna up and radar on in terms of where he fits in the number of majors won.
Yeah.
But, you know, your point is well taken with Rory heading into Augusta. And what I like about Rory and what he's doing is he's freed up his ability to just focus on golf and, you know, get rid of being in the crossfire of all of the politics and the business side of the PGA Tour and get back to what he does best, and that's performing on the golf course. So, you know, Rory has to, you know, needs to break down his swing, and I think in a way that he gets one consistent swing. If you listen to his press conference earlier in the week, he talks about having a swing for his irons and a swing for his driver. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work and work well on Thursday, but Friday it clearly didn't. And, you know, when you start getting a couple of different thoughts and a couple of different things, that's where you can start to breed an inconsistency that will start to happen. And, you know, that's where he'll start making some birdies, but he's also going to make some bogeys or others. And that's what's happening. So, you know, while the rest of the field isn't making those blemishes, Rory is at this point. So he's got to sharpen things up before he, you know, goes down Magnolia Lane.
Let's try Sam again in the Western Burbs. What's up, Sam?
Hey, gentlemen. Good morning. How's it going? Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Hey, Sam. Happy St. Paddy's Day.
Hey, guys. Question for you. So I've been tinkering since mid-summer last year with my putting, and I tend to, like, always go through the old-school method of dropping the hands like a pendulum, and, you know, your hands are away from your body and just, like, let it go like a clock. But I've recently been kind of tucking my elbows into my, like, obliques and just swing it that way. What are your thoughts on that? I rock a Scotty Cameron Newport with some kind of serious weight into it, so it's like a hammer. And I'm just wondering if I should go back to the old method or just stick with what somewhat works. I'm a pretty crappy putter.
Well, you're at the mediocre point of your career as a putter, I
correct.
Guess, right? So, yeah, no, as far as the Scotty, I would also encourage you to also look at a mallet. But at the same time, with your elbows, that's how the, you know, the great Chip Beck putted that same way, by keeping your elbows tucked in like that. And so all it is, it's more of a rocking sensation with your shoulders, and it allows that blade to stay pretty darn square. And I think if you went to a face balanced putter versus the toe hang that you have, I think you'll find even better putting will start to occur with the style of putting you just chose to go with last summer.
So it's kind of like what Tiger talks about all the time, of like releasing the toe, and sometimes the toe doesn't go around, and I tend to, you know, leave things on the high side, which is better than the amateur side. But you think a mallet would kind of help that? I apologize.
Yes, I do, because I think that mallet will also help you release the putter straight down the line. And so what I would do is concentrate after you strike the ball to keep your eyes right where the ball was and see what they call the magic dot. It becomes the ball all of a sudden. If you're so focused and the ball leaves, you see the image of the ball. It's all black. It's a black circle. And then look down the line as your putter chases the ball down the line. It's just stay square just a little bit longer through impact, and you won't believe the magic that can start to happen.
Solid. Appreciate it. I'll try the advice. I got a couple guys with mallets out there that I can tinker with and try out. So I appreciate the advice, man.
You got it.
Awesome. Good luck, Sam.
Y'all have a great Saturday.
You as well. It's Sam in the Western Burbs. You want to join us? You've got a golf question for us. 312-332-3776. Mike will try to help you out with all of your putting woes. And maybe he can be your Rory McIlroy.
Now, let's be clear. I know a lot about putting, but me, myself, and I struggle like everybody else out there. So, you know, it's a puzzle without an answer. And when you see 2-3 putters, I'm guilty of a man with 3 watches who still can't tell time at points in my life.
All right. When we come back, we'll go through the Players Championship, what's going on down there. Pretty good leaderboard. We'll size it up when we come back on the CDGA Golf Show.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our 4 Chicagoland locations today. As we take a look at the Players Championship leaderboard right now, pretty good one. Wyndham Clark, currently your leader at 14 under. He's followed by Xander Schauffele and Nick Taylor, each at 10 under. Matt Fitzpatrick and Maverick McNealy, each at 9 under in a tie for 4th. Matty Schmid, Scottie Scheffler, Corey Connors, Tom Hoagie at 8 under. Some of the other notable names, you got Hideki Matsuyama and Rory McIlroy, each at 6 under in a tie for 14th as well. So pretty good leaderboard here. I know some people are a little disappointed in the field itself this year, and that moniker of the 5th major is starting to lose some of its luster when you lose names like Rahm, and you lost Koepka last year. But yeah, all of that stuff, I think it's still been a fun tournament to watch, and there has been a good competition, as evidenced by the leaderboard that you've got right now.
And I would wholeheartedly agree with you, Tyler. You know, this event, because it's always played at an iconic stadium course, yes, with the Island Green. There's just, in that finishing hole, there's just so much to want to watch. It kind of gives us that real first taste of really knowing the golf course in preparation of Augusta. And so I'm interested in watching purely just to see how the golf course plays, reacts, and is either vulnerable, and it sometimes gives these guys fits, you know. And different games match up well here, and that's why I like this golf course. You just don't have to be a bomb and gouge kind of a player. You look at a guy like Nick Taylor. Nick Taylor's 35 years old. The guy's a bulldog. I mean, he believes he can win. You know, that 4th win that he had at Waste Management is really starting to, you know, show some end results. And, you know, he's the kind of guy who, you know, doesn't hit it long, but his wedge play is so good. He knows not to try to get home in 2 on the par 5s, because a guy like himself is probably going to drive it in more harm than good. So he lays back a lot, And his stats from 100 to 110 yards are unbelievable this week. And that's why he is atop the leaderboard. So it fits a game like him. But at the same time, guys that can bomb it like Wyndham Clark and Matty Fitzpatrick, you know, it fits their eye as well. And an interesting note on Matt Fitzpatrick, it came out this week that he discovered that when he redid his clubs at Phoenix, he forgot to re-grip his driver. And in there, he put all 4 gram weights in all of the clubs, but he took them all out because they weren't working. And so he hasn't realized that he's had that in there. So he re-gripped the club, and now he's one of the best drivers in the event this week. And so he's tied there with Maverick McNealy. Here's another great human interest story. He had an injury between his collarbone and shoulder that sidelined him after Harbortown, and he has been on the DL, came back late last fall, but he's made 6 of 7 cuts. And wouldn't this be an amazing way to get your first win at the Players' Championship? So, you know, he's healthy and strong, and, you know, it's funny. If you're in CDGA Fantasy Golf and picked him, you're happy. And I know there are some people and some friends of mine that picked Maverick McNealy, not because they thought he was going to play well, but just because of his name. But here you go.
Yeah.
Maverick.
One of the guys I want to talk about, it's a guy that both you and I are very high on, especially for the Masters, but he has not had the start to the season that I think a lot of us who may have thought about picking him for the Masters would have liked to see, and that is Victor Hovland. He made the cut, but you look at the results that of what he's had so far this season. He's 4 for 4 in his cuts, but he really hasn't been in the thick of things competitive-wise in these events that he's played in so far. And sure, he's made the cut, but it's nothing's been outstanding, especially in this tournament here, the Players. And this is one where you'd kind of like to see your guy get a little bit of momentum heading into the Masters when you're only about 3 weeks out.
Well said. And, you know, you look at a guy like Victor with, I mean, the fairy tale fall he had, you know, and the type of golf he was playing was at a level that I have hardly ever seen, maybe since Tiger was playing. I mean, he was such in a dominating mode and fearless and a confidence and an air about him that I'm not seeing now. And I think time away from the game, time with the newfound success, time with the newfound sponsors and all the obligations that come along with all of this newfound quick instant fame, and he's such a likable guy, and I'm sure he has a hard time saying no to things. So he's probably, you know, guilty of trying to figure out how to balance life right now and make sure I'm giving the same detail and attention and commitment to what got me here in the first place. And unfortunately, golf will expose that in a New York second when you decide to take shortcuts and do things sort of in the, you don't hold to your processes. Yeah. And, you know, he's got to get back to that. And hopefully we are going to see a strong finish out of him. And, you know, but Victor has been a bit of a slow starter in the beginning of a year. So on one hand, it doesn't concern me, but as I was one of those that are picking him for the Masters, and you know, this week will tell me a lot whether I'm going to stay with it.
Yeah, it's one of those, like, you look at his game, and I think you bring up the perfect point there of, you know, this past season for him was his launching point into that upper echelon. Like, he was good, he was a phenom at Oklahoma State, he had high expectations when he got onto the tour. But last year was his first year where it was like, all right, watch out for this guy. He could win a major this year. He was playing at that level of golf. And now this year, I don't want to say the expectation is to win a major, but you feel like if you're going to really establish yourself among these top dogs, if you want to work yourself into the Scotty, Rory class of golfers, you do have to go out and win a major this year. And that's going to be one of those things that we're going to be tracking with him, and maybe he figures it out for the Masters. Maybe he's one of those guys. He'll go big game hunting when he does get to Augusta, but he does have to figure some things out right now because it has been a little bit of a slow and disappointing start for him.
It has, and I also think, too, this is all part of his maturation process because, remember, he's pretty young, and you know, he's got a lot of runway in front of him for his career. But at the same time, this is also going to be, and like, I'll bet this is going to be a part of his career where he's going to learn some really valuable lessons that are either going to shape him to a potential double-digit major winner or potentially the guy, the best player who's never won.
Yeah. You don't want to end up in that class with Ricky Fowler right there. You want to find your way right over the top. By the way, for Bears fans as well down at the Players, I'm sure you saw this as well, the man who was following Rory around on the course was Caleb Williams. And he kind of had the inside the ropes. He was mic'd up with the PGA Tour as well. He was putting out some videos and stuff like that. So it seemed like and I think he even acknowledged it, like, oh, it seems like there's a lot of Bears fans out here with all the cheering and stuff like that.
Well, of course. I mean, they're one of America's teams, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and with all of the changes that are coming around, and who knows what's going to happen this spring with the Chicago Bears. So, yeah, it was exciting to see. And, you know, just to see the connection, you know, with golf, Rory McIlroy, mm-hmm. one of the best in the world, and the Chicago Bears looking to get perhaps the best draft pick in the whole thing. So, yeah. Awesome.
So that was cool to see. And he, I think he, what did he say he would shoot at the course? I think he said he'd shoot like a 145 because he's just starting to get into the game. And he was in awe of just the way that the course looked and being like on the grounds. It's one of those things, like, there's a big difference between watching some of these tournaments on TV and then when you actually get to the courses and see what all these guys are dealing with. It's a totally different beast.
No, it really is. And if you've never been up close to these guys, the sound, the feel, and just the launch and how the speed that they go through is just awesome. And I would encourage anyone, go out to the NV5 at the Glen this spring. Yeah. And these are you're going to see guys that were on the tour and have come back and are trying to get back on the tour. And your next superstars are going to, that's where Scotty won.
Yeah.
He mm-hmm. won up at the Glen Club. Yeah. So if you want to, what,
Cam Young finished top five in that same tournament too?
Yes, he did. As a matter of great mm-hmm. call. So, yeah, here's a great chance to be up close. But to Caleb's point, yeah, when you see it up close like that, it's just awesome. TV does it no justice. And, yeah, so it's exciting.
Also, shout out to one of the local kids as well, Doug Gim, 3-under, tied for 38 right now. He tees off in a little less than 90 minutes from now, right before we go off the air here on the CDGA Golf Show. All right, when we come back, I do want to get into some of the full swing episodes as well. Let's go through another three batches of them, because mm-hmm. there were some good ones. One about Tom Kim, one about the Fitzpatrick brothers as well, and then the Ryder Cup, closer and closer, getting an inside look with Zach Johnson and all that stuff. All that coming up next. This segment brought to you by PGA Tour Superstore. Visit any of our four Chicagoland locations today.
This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club, ESPN 1000, 100.3 HD2, and the ESPN Chicago app.
The segment is brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club. This is the CDGA Golf Show, presented by Glenview Park Golf Club. Tyler Ockin and Mike Gilligan with you every single Saturday throughout the golf season. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. Now, Mike, we've been watching Full Swing. It's been a great season so far. I think the third episode with Joel Damon and Wyndham Clark may be the best episode I've seen, regardless of season. First season, second season, doesn't matter. I think that third one with Wyndham and Joel Damon is the best one I've seen so far. But we did each watch. You finished it. I got through the next three. And they were some good ones, too. Oh, yeah. You look at the Tom Kim episode, talking about a young guy on the tour. He's kind of their Sahith Theegala of this season. Young guy on the tour, establishing himself as a winner on the tour. Now what's the next step for some of these young guys? You've got the In the Shadows with Matt and Alex Fitzpatrick. That was a nice little trip down memory lane at the British last year, where
sure was.
Alex was fantastic. I had forgotten about that. And then pick six is episode number six, where Zach Johnson gets the spotlight and how he is going to make his selections. A lot of it centering around Justin Thomas as well, but we can kind of go one by one here. The Tom Kim episode, fun guy. And obviously he had the mud incident last year that everyone remembers that went viral on social media and made its rounds. And he's just this young guy on tour. He's exactly what you'd imagine a 21-year-old with a lot of money in his pocket would act like and be like. And it was fun. It was funny. He's just this aloof little guy. Everyone knows someone like Tom Kim in their life.
Oh, yeah. He's like that little puppy dog that just won't go away.
Exactly.
And, you know, for the filming of this, he was actually 20, so he wasn't even legal. But yet, it was amazing to see how, you know, a 20-year-old's trying to relate to the highest tour, and most of these players are all older and significantly older than he is, but he's trying to fit in. And, you know, he just marches to a beat of a different drummer. He's just a carefree, just a fun-loving guy, and he's not hard on himself, which is, I think, a great moniker for all of us to sort of look at and how he holds himself. And it's kind of funny when he misses the drive into Magnolia Lane and how he sort of goes, oh, nice job, Tom. I just missed the entrance to Augusta, you know, and he was talking, building up like, wait till you see this entrance. And, you know, he's just a great guy. And I think a very relatable guy when he went through the misfortunes of, you know, what happened at the PGA Championship. And I thought watching Rory, watching what happened to Tom as it was happening, as he was watching on the TV, and he just had hardly much of a reaction. It was like, yeah, that's Tom, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's just a great, fun-loving guy and a guy that we all would love to see be successful. And the success he's had internationally is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
What he is in the process of doing. He is, while he is fun and cute and all that good stuff, he is a fierce competitor and a very, very talented young man.
Yeah, no doubt about that. It was a very interesting, it's one of the more interesting ones because it is a look inside the life of a young 20-something who is trying to work their way on the tour. And you see the guys like cracking jokes with him and like Scotty playing pranks on them. They all know he's the little kid. He's the little brother in the room, and they mess with him a lot. And it's kind of funny to see. But listen, he's one of those guys. He's going to get out there on the course, and he could really make some noise in some of these tournaments, and this could be a big year for him too.
Yeah, it's kind of like he's a pledge going into a fraternity, and he's kind of paying his dues, and he's looking up to his big brothers, and he wants to be like them eventually, and he will be. But he's also the kind of guy that's going to be like Rory, and he's going to give back to the next Tom Kim in a few years. Mm-hmm. He is that kind of guy. And I tell you how I say that because of the one scene in the episode when they're giving autographs, and he's ready to give somebody an autograph, and he goes, I don't need your signature, the little guy says. He goes, can you go down and call Rory McIlroy for me? And you know what? He took it in stride, where a lot of these big egomaniacs would have just lost their marbles and walked away. And so I just, that endeared me to him, and he understands his place, and that's what's so beautiful about it.
No doubt about that. Then you get to the Matt and Alex Fitzpatrick episode, and that's something that, look, Alex Fitzpatrick, he's outside the top 700 in the world. And you've got Matt Fitzpatrick, who is on the heels. He's a guy who's chasing majors. He won at the U.S. Open at the Country Club in Brookline. Like, he has skins on the wall. He's a big-time winner on the PGA Tour. Meanwhile, his brother is a guy who's trying to grind it out on the European Tour and find success there. And then they go to the Zurich, where they play together. And you see Matt was fantastic, but because it's a team event and Alex was there too, and he kind of was the anchor to the ship and was kind of weighing down everything, and they were in the thick of things, had a chance to win them. Remember, that's a tournament too that Nick Hardy won.
Exactly.
The local guy out of Northbrook here in Illinois. But that was a tournament where if Alex was just a little bit better, they very well could go out and win that one, and he's really hard on himself there. But then fast forward to the British, and he finishes top 20, and it's like kind of his breakthrough onto the scene, and he gets on because he goes out and plays very well in the qualifier. What'd they say? Hundreds of people are trying to qualify for 19 spots.
That's right.
And he's one of the ones that ends up getting through and breaking through and winning that. And it was a cool story to see with a guy like Alex Fitzpatrick, and he's got the support of his girlfriend, who's a golfer at Wake Forest, and it's just kind of like a golf relationship there, and her support that she brings. She goes out to all these tournaments and stuff. It was really cool and a very interesting episode to see both sides of the ledger in terms of the high ranking and really big time winner on the tour and the guy who's just trying to grind it out in like the equivalent of the minor leagues.
No doubt. And, you know, it was really cool to see some of the footage back at the country club when Matt won as a U.S. amateur. And
yeah, mm-hmm. and he was on the bag.
And he was on the bag, actually. Yeah. Then they show the U.S. Open where he wins. And then, you know, I have to give kudos and credits, though, to Matt for being such a great big brother, because, you know, it could be just all about Matt and nothing about Alex. And I just think the way that Matt decides to try to involve his brother in that team event, because he didn't have to do that. He could have picked, you know, somebody else on tour and had a much better chance at cashing, you know, a better check or finishing much, much higher and potentially even winning. But no, he chose to extend an opportunity to his brother out of sheer love and compassion for him. You know, at the time he was 705th in the world.
Yeah.
But then, you know, it just goes to show you, I think this episode epitomizes the journeys and the ups and the downs that these guys live day in and day out. We always see, you know, the end result, the check on Sunday, everybody's happy and spraying champagne. But you forget that half the field just got cut yesterday. You know,
and they're walked away home without a dime.
Without a dime. In fact, expenses incurred.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're going home with mental baggage. Like, what's going on? I don't know. And so it has a grind to it. But what this episode shows us is the tenacity and the tenaciousness that Alex has to want to be so badly like his big brother. And he goes out and qualifies for the British Open. And that is, I mean, let's just start there. That in itself is a feat. But not only does he go to the British Open, he makes the cut and he beats his brother.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I'm getting choked up now for it. It's just amazing to see golf can do that for us. And it just shows you can't ever give up in this crazy game as much as you want to.
Right.
But, you know, and, you know, it was one great event. But now guess what? Come Monday, he goes back to being Alex and still trying to get to the PGA Tour.
Mm-hmm. And him talking about how that British Open kind of took him out of his brother's shadow. Like, he goes into all the media tents and they don't ask him about being Matt's brother anymore. They ask him about his round. And for him, that was a huge mental hurdle for him to clear, and I thought that was really cool. The other part, too, like, it kind of reminded me about my relationship with my brother, too, because my brother, super genius kid, like, started going to high school math classes when he was in seventh grade, was always ahead of the pack, and it's like, I walked into every math class in high school, and it's like, oh, you're Mike Locke's brother. And it was just like, yeah, like, that's me. And just kind of like dealing with that when I was in high school. And I'm sure it was very similar for Alex. Although my joke that I always like to say is it took him 6 years from the first time he walked through the doors at Glenbrook South High School to graduate from Glenbrook South High School. But that's neither here nor there.
Wow.
But no, like it was cool to see like the personal growth for an Alex Fitzpatrick to go out there and establish his own name. And listen, he still has plenty of work to do. But it was cool too to see like Matt was extending the olive branch, because hey, if he and Alex go out there and win the Zurich, he just got himself 2 years on the tour.
Oh yes, he did, and that in itself is just such a, you know, I'm thinking of others first instead of myself, and these guys, you know, are so confident and so cocky at times because they have to be, and they have to be very self-centered in their approach in terms of what they do. But to be able to balance it in situations like that, I think it's just so beautiful and what Matt was able to extend. And you know what? We may point back to this as a big moment in Alex's career, 5, 6, 8, 10 years down the road. We may look back at this and just the gesture to getting into the Zurich, to give him that experience of not doing well on a stage so that when he got back to that stage, he could do well again. And that's exactly what happened. And that's how we get better at golf. We visit areas of our game when we're about to break par or about to break 80 or about to break 100. And we don't often do it the first time because we didn't, we're not familiar with the situation. But because we went through and we learned from it, when we get back into that situation, we now know what to do.
Yep.
And that's a perfect illustration of it, that episode.
All right, when we come back, let's get into the pick six episode, or centering around Zach Johnson and the decisions that he had to make when he was crafting the Ryder Cup team. We'll do all that when we come back. This segment brought to you by Cog Hill Golf and Country Club, home of 42 practice bays with top tracer technology.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.
All right, so we dove into episodes 4 and 5. Episode 6 is called Pick 6, and it centers around Zach Johnson and the decision that he has to make surrounding the Ryder Cup. By the way, this segment is brought to you by Golf Elgin, home of the Highlands of Elgin and Bowes Creek Country Club. And so this one was interesting to me because Zach Johnson, kind of an icy guy, that's pretty well known on the tour and how he's viewed, but he is the captain of the Ryder Cup, and you see him out with at these dinners with Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler, and then there's the other plot that is Keegan Bradley and how Keegan is going to, and you know how much Keegan wants to be a part of this Ryder Cup team. What were some of your biggest takeaways from seeing this episode in particular, especially knowing what you know happened with the Ryder Cup team?
Yeah, it really made me think a lot differently about Keegan Bradley. I think Keegan Bradley and Tom Kim are the two big stars over the whole series and season this year.
I'd give Wyndham Clark in.
And Wyndham Clark, yes, I would too as well. Thank you. But yeah, in this, if you're not a Zach Johnson fan, you're certainly still not going to be a Zach Johnson fan after you watch this. His personality is a little coarse for sandpaper at times. Yeah. And, you know, it's just, he's just a unique person. And I didn't know that they could focus a whole show, you know, the whole episode just on this decision. And it was interesting, and I really felt for him when he had to make the call to Keegan. And, you know, they do acknowledge the suitcase that he brought back in 2012. I thought that was very telling, and that happened here at Medina.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so he has yet, folks, to unpack the team suitcase, which is loaded with merchandise and swag. Like, I mean, you would die to have what's in that suitcase.
Yeah.
Except the dirty underwear, of course. But he has not opened it, and he won't open it until we win, until he's part of a Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
And so that thing might be staying closed for quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you kind of see, and I think part of the interesting perspective, too, is hearing some of these people's wives talk, too, on the Full Swing, because they see, like, the mental struggles that all these guys go through. Because that is the mental part of it, that and the burden that they bear when they go out, and in the case of Keegan Bradley, I mean, he's got a suitcase that he hasn't opened in how long now? Like,
2012.
So over a decade at this point? Uh-huh. Like, that to me kind of shows you everything that you need to know about how pressing and how mentally draining a lot of this is for some of these guys.
And the most amazing part about it all, it's all about a gold chalice. That's all about 14 inches
get paid
up,
for it.
And you don't get paid a dime. Mm-hmm. It's all about pride for your country and playing for the ultimate team. The other 11 players that you're calling your Ryder Cup, you know, compadres and teammates. And this is what Liv wishes their team events could be like, right? Mm-hmm. This kind of passion, this kind of fire, and this kind of emotion. And I think it's such a cool episode to see emotionally how this affects them and how they go about their life and how they actually establish their goals for the season. And this is among the very top with winning a major.
Yep. All right. When we come back, we will get into some of the things that were said at the Players' Championship in response to Jay Monahan's leadership, in where the LIV and PGA Tour merger is at, and how golf can regain some of the fans as well that they need a little bit of a charge and stuff like that. And Rory spoke a little bit about that. We'll talk about that when we come back. This segment has been brought to you by Golf Elgin.
This is the CDGA Golf Show on ESPN 1100.3 HD2 and the ESPN Chicago app.